Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it. Great to have you in on a Wednesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel. Heard the Salt Dogs a little bit earlier. We'll dive into the Big Red Blitz. Some incredible news and notes coming out of the Big Red Tour across the state. Arizona State is in a world of hurt, potentially. Update on what's going on with the NCAA. They are knocking on that door in Tempe, and a really incredible honor for Spencer Schwellenbach to get into. Mike Babcock with us from Hail Varsity in about 20 minutes. We'll hear from Shuey, U.S. Open time. So we'll talk to Mike Shuhart from Wilderness Ridge in 30 minutes. And an extended segment, some reaction to Tom Osborne's comments yesterday, and a guy who experienced it and won some titles along the way, and some insight on, you know, what he thinks of Nebraska's secondary, specifically Nebraska's new addition, Eric Warfield, former Chief, going to be with us in the 5 o'clock hour. Numbers to dial up, 466-3776-800-825-5865. Can email Chris at hailvarsity.com and give us a follow on Twitter at Schmidt underscore radio. Chris Schmidt at Herbal Essence for Elijah Herbel. It's where you find him. What's good today? You got your soccer gear rocking. You kept one eye on baseball, one eye on the pitch, it looks like.
Yeah, it's the Euros, which it's really fun this year because it's the 2020 Euros, even though we're in the year 2021 because they had to delay the whole tournament from last year. And it's just it's like World Cup light. And I love the World Cup. I think it's really awesome. All the national teams getting together and all these people are, rather than supporting just a team that they like, they're supporting their country. And all the players like to put their countries on their backs, you know, and put in good performances. So it makes a lot of fun. And I've really been enjoying the Euros, and it gives me a little something to do in the summertime after my Nuggets and my Avalanche have been knocked out.
Yeah, it's not good. We will have exclusive audio from our friends at Barstool regarding the he's not a fighter.
The Suns and Four guy.
Right. He did an interview and laid out everything that happened. Those Nuggets fans, man. Not all, but some. Bad idea to mess with Suns fan from Denver. So let's dive in. And the topic was kind of all over with Nebraska football, from Coach Fisher touching on just what his room is going to be like in the secondary. I think Nebraska football fans very confident about Nebraska's secondary. Coach Chenander fired up about his defense. Chins was rocking the Charlie McBride black shirt belt buckle today. And then Scott Frost also in a great mood, able to interact. And the gatherings across the state were pretty intimate. That's really cool for Nebraska fans to get up close and personal. Amy Williams talking about her squad, of course, and really the awesome job she did with fighting through COVID and her basketball team. Coach Hoiberg's on the road, number of Nebraska assistants. And then you get to some of the position group coaches, specifically Mario Verduzco. Quarterbacks really always on our mind because Nebraska's had a rich history of difference makers at quarterback. And you had Mario Verduzco and, again, Derek Peterson and Greg Smith covering the Big Red Blitz today for Hail Varsity. You had Scott Frost and Mario Verduzco spend some time talking about Logan Smothers. And when we think about the quarterback, obviously Adrian Martinez on everyone's radar. What's his season going to be like, year four as a starter? But what's behind him, right? You have one former starter that's now at Rice. You have another guy that was really talented is going to be probably winning that job again at Rutgers. And what do you have behind Adrian Martinez? You have Heinrich Harburg, the standout from Kearney, and you got a guy in the program in Logan Smothers that it seems like things are clicking better with him. You had Mario Verduzco talking about Logan Smothers earlier today. He has rare innate vision. He sees a wider picture. He's a quick blinker. He has got the mental part of this thing down. And when it comes to Logan's struggles, it was his passing motion. And after 15 weeks of drill work in the spring, it should be resolved. The problem with Logan, per Mario, was his release point. And that ain't good. But as Mario put it, look, you have COVID, you come in cold, you got to work through it, and you got to kind of wean out that inconsistency. So technically, he'll be a redshirt freshman heading to camp. And Nebraska is really, really comfortable just where they're at with their quarterback room. That's a main reason they didn't go to the portal for break in case of emergency quarterback. And listen, Nebraska's going to work, going to develop, going to drill, and they're going to get a guy like Logan Smothers developed. They're going to work, they're going to drill, and they need to get a guy like Harburg some experience. And that's wonderful. The thing that kind of stood out to me was with Adrian Martinez and Mario Verduzco talking about what Adrian needs to do and a little bit of last year. We've spent some time this week on the benching. It came up, right? Well, Mario reiterated, got to take care of the football. Again, the numbers to know, 18.9% of Nebraska's drives last year ended in a turnover offensively. That is almost one in five. That's right there. When you look at nine fumbles and interceptions, you had six from McCaffrey. You had three from Adrian. My God. And you look at all those one-score games you lost, Minnesota, Northwestern, Iowa. I mean, 20%, that's a killer for you. So when it comes to Adrian and what Mario said, the thing is, limit turnovers. This is 3 years and minus two games that you were benched. You got to make sure you're giving Nebraska a chance to win the game. Don't do anything to endanger that. Sounds so simple, but Adrian's a guy that, bless his heart, he wanted to go make a play, and it wasn't for glory. He was trying to make a play for his team to win. He wants to win so bad. And Adrian kind of reiterated that, look, quarterback's just one cog in the wheel of success or failure. You can screw it up. Obviously, the offense, with their turnover issues, put the defense in some bad spots last year, but also failed to get any points. Or when you did turn it over, it was prime real estate for the other team, extremely short field. So the understanding moving forward, give your team a chance to win and try not to do too much. Let your teammates go make plays. And specifically, if you love your teammates, take care of the football, man, because you're hurting them on the offensive side and defensive side. Now, this isn't Adrian being completely reckless, in my opinion. Yeah, there were some bad throws. Yeah, there were some fumbles against Rutgers when you're wearing sleeves and you're not a sleeve-wearing team in cold weather, allegedly. But there were some times that Adrian wasn't his fault where he's backed the pass and someone breaks through the line against a senior captain, and here comes a strip sack, right? I mean, the end of the Iowa game, perfect example, and that's not the first time that's happened where Nebraska drops back, happened against Rutgers. Nebraska drops back to throw, and someone busts through the line and smokes your quarterback. So turnover struggles, fumbles, interceptions, and specifically the interception. The interception against Northwestern, you're driving third quarter, you're up, right? You go into halftime scoring 13 unanswered. right? You're up 13-7 after half. Nebraska's got the ball. They're driving. Let's throw a jump ball to Austin Allen, underthrown interception. There goes your starting gig.
Well, and just when you're talking about 20% of your possessions ending in turnovers, that's bad. But, I mean, Scott Frost at UCF, if that's happening, it's okay because on your other four possessions, you're putting up 24 points, maybe 28 points. But in the Big Ten, I mean, you can get...
You're not doing it.
You can get two or three possessions in a quarter. I mean, some of these other fast-paced conferences, the Big 12, the Pac-12, the AAC, you can get five or six possessions in a quarter. That can happen. But in the Big Ten, you're going to be against teams that like to have possession of the ball, teams that like to run the ball. I'm talking Northwestern, I'm talking Iowa. And
Wisconsin.
Yeah, and you're against those teams, you're lucky if you get a third possession in a quarter. So if you're turning the ball over one out of every five possessions and say you're punting it the other three, that means you're getting one scoring possession a quarter. Or sorry, a half, if you're talking maybe five possessions and a half total. That's unacceptable. It could work other places, but this is part of what Scott Frost's learning adjustment to the Big Ten's got to be, is these turnovers, they matter more in the Big Ten than they do in the other conferences just because of the style of play of the Big Ten.
Well, and flip it around. I mean, it's been in some of the games Nebraska's looked good and won. They haven't won a lot of them with ease, but you've had the defense go get you the football. You think about Purdue and how things looked good for quite a while against Penn State, you're getting turnovers. I mean, Penn State was awful, and a lot of that was because of Nebraska's doing, taking care of the football, right? I mean, the secondary was phenomenal. Deontay Williams said, "That's my bike, punk," took the football, the strip sack and touchdown, right? He had a defensive score in that game. But the third quarter interception against Northwestern, that played the role in Adrian's benching. And it was a pretty detailed answer that Super Mario gave on why Adrian lost his job. And he said, look, and this is from Sam McEwen here. We sat down, Frosty and I, with Adrian. We talked another half hour. And I outlined the points that were critical that led to the decision. And it wasn't based on I think or I believe, any sort of that stuff. It was just the objective numbers in regards to doing X, Y, and Z. And we're like, finally, dude, you can't do that. The interception in the Northwestern game, that one. And it completely frustrated Frost. It frustrated Verduzco. It hurt Verduzco. And it really, really hurt Adrian. It was hard on Mario, and it was also hard on Adrian. I mean, think about that as a quarterback. I mean, that's the breaks. That's part of playing ball. You're going to sit. You're going to start. You're going to lose your spot in some instances. You're going to have to go fight and get it back. That's the silver lining, right, for going into this year. There's really nothing Adrian hasn't seen or experienced on a football field now. But that's – you can't be loose with the football. And – I know it's been hammered and this horse is dead. We're on a second or third horse that's dead, beating the turnover drum here. But Nebraska is probably a 3-5, a plus 3-5 win number over this 500 number. They're not below 500 in the Big Ten. They're not 12-20 and going into year four if they just take care of the football. Some of those one-score games are going to flip, and you're going to win because you have an extra possession, assuming you would have punched it in the red zone, right? That you can't just say, oh, Nebraska, because their red zone's not been great either. But at least give yourself a shot, and you've given yourself a shot in a lot of close games, mainly with Iowa, mainly with Northwestern, okay, and even going back to some of those Colorado games. You've had back-breaking turnovers. So that's just it. And can you just go play free and make the adjustment? I think he can. And the other side of it too, Elijah, is there'll be more help similar to 2018, in my humble opinion, around him on offense. He'll have the best supporting cast offensively with skill guys, and they got to find a couple of backs, but I think they can do that. Frost did say Steps should be good to go post-foot injury for fall camp. There are dudes there. There's talent there. Let the guys around you make some things happen.
And I know pro football is different, but a little bit of a case in point here is just look at what happened to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers whenever they cut Jameis and went for a quarterback that took care of the ball a little better. I know Tom Brady's one of the best to ever do it, and pro football is a bit of a different animal, but I mean, the pieces around Tom Brady on that Tampa Bay team didn't change all that much. They added a couple pieces here and there, but generally that was pretty much the same team that was playing around Jameis Winston. I'd say about 80 to 85% of the starting lineup was the same.
Absolutely it was. The difference is there weren't 30 interceptions being handed out.
Yeah, and I mean, whenever you do that, now you're not taking your picks. Defense off the field. Like, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers had to win in these high-scoring slugfests under Jameis Winston because they were expecting that the other team was probably going to get an extra 3 or 4 possessions.
10 to 13 points a game off turnovers.
Exactly. So you get a quarterback in. I mean, it's Tom Brady in the twilight of his career, but what did he do? He took care of the ball, and as the season went on, he
didn't
started to
against
look,
Green Bay, but look I more like see himself. Your point.
But it's just how important taking care of the ball is. They were beating the teams that they were supposed to pretty handily just because they didn't give those other teams other possessions to work with.
Simple enough. Isn't it so simple? Isn't football just a simple ball game? You block, you tackle. You don't fumble. You get 5 yards on first down running the football. You hit the tight end in the flat. Little play action. Someone's wide open. There's 4 guys around the ball carrier defensively. It's 3rd and 8. You got somebody off the edge and go sack the quarterback. Simple game. Right? Yeah. Well, pretty interesting stuff. We'll dive into some football thoughts and some baseball with Mike Babcock. Babbers from Hail Varsity on the way. Eric Warfield, standout Husker, national champ coming up next hour. It's Hail Varsity on a Wednesday presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Thanks for hanging out. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbo. We say hi to historian, author, Hall of Famer, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Mike Babcock with us at MD Babs on Twitter. Babbers, you didn't mow your yard today, did you?
I mowed my yard the 2 previous days.
Okay, so you got in before it hit triple digits.
Yes.
I was
going
to say, if you were to mow your yard, and it's beautiful, do you have a Grateful Dead tank top?
No, I don't. I don't have any tank tops. I'm too old for that.
You do what you want, Babbers.
Yeah, and my yard looks good only because the weeds look good when they're trimmed.
You're too hard on yourself, man. Your yard's gorgeous. Drive by it twice a day and a wave. Lot to get into. I want to ask you something, though. As long as you've covered college football and you've seen and heard a ton of the scandals, we go back to SMU and the Hartley Dykes era that put 4 teams on NCAA probation in late 88. I turn my attention, what is going to be the fallout here with Arizona State and the alleged illegal visits that have been documented? I mean, there's a dossier of photographs that the NCAA has of illegal visits during COVID with coaches. I'm still waiting on punishment by the NCAA for FBI wiretaps for basketball. But do you think the NCAA will wind up and slap ASU something fierce if they're found guilty of what's alleged?
Well, just looking at the story that you sent me the link, and it looks like it's a pretty serious matter, obviously. You would think, you have to prove it.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like there's a lot of evidence there. But if proven that these allegations are proven, you would think that the NCAA has to come down pretty seriously on ASU. But, you know, you mentioned that FBI thing. That's taken a while to get anything accomplished there. And you wonder, why is it moving so slowly? Is it out of concern of fairness to the institutions, or, are there other reasons for it? I question so much of what the NCAA does here of late, but ASU, there's some serious allegations there with a significant amount of evidence that it probably took place. I would think that you would have to say, hey, we've got to set an example. We can't have this happening.
Well, and in the name of COVID safety, you're blatantly just bringing people in and to have a 10 p.m. meeting in the stairwell. I mean, it's pretty cloak and dagger. And I mean, I've always liked Term Edwards. I mean, he's kind of the CEO of that program, but it doesn't sound like many people in the ASU staff or department, like a couple of guys that have risen the ladder, climbed the ladder, so to speak, to be in power. And you've got, they don't know who, there's so many folks who don't like the, a couple of Herm's assistants that are leading the charge in the name of recruiting, that they can't figure out who didn't turn in some of these guys. I mean, it's really a divided situation in that coaching office.
Boy, you don't want that in any way, shape, or form. But, yeah, you're right, too. The pandemic, that just magnifies everything because the health and safety of people is involved in it as well.
Mike, gonna switch gears. Big Red Blitz going on, and you've got Coach Shenander that's super excited about his defense. Coach Mario spending a little bit of time on the quarterbacks with where Smothers is going and what Harburg's got in front of him, and then the topic of Adrian specifically a little more in depth with his benching. And when I saw the quote about that shouldn't have happened, I was like, well, what shouldn't have happened? Should Adrian have not been benched after the interception against Northwestern? Or no, you shouldn't have thrown the football and got it picked. Adrian, Mario clarified that in the article a little further. No, you can't turn the football over. Babers, is it something you're confident in here this fall where Nebraska can be better at taking care of the football? I know it's an opinion right now until we see proof, but you can absolutely be better as a team, right? Taking care of the football. There's bad luck, there's no luck, and then there's fumbles, right? Fumbles and interceptions, 20% of the drives ending in a turnover per the Athlon College Football Preview.
Yeah, you can't have it. The question is, okay, so you're going to focus on that. You're going to focus on not doing it. But sometimes I think there's a fine line between, so you focus on not doing it, you're thinking more about not doing it, and it leads to doing it more. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, mm-hmm. It becomes a mindset or whatever. But I think it has to be a focus. Obviously, you have to work on it. You have to it's fundamentals, I guess, it fits into that category. But that's the area that Nebraska has not been effective, and because it hasn't been, that's where the lack of the success that you want is comes from. Is you've got to take care of the football first and foremost, because you've got a quarterback certainly that has the talent, and Adrian Martinez, to do the things that you want, but he has to cut out those mistakes. And it's not like, they're talking about two or three significant mistakes can undo a lot of good that he can do. So, that's really important. It's got to be a focus, but it can't get in your head to the point where it's just making it worse.
Talking with Mike Babcock here on Hail Varsity Radio. And Mike, there's an old thought among football fans. It's kind of gone by the wayside now, but it used to be that a certain number of interceptions from a quarterback was acceptable because it meant that they were throwing some dangerous passes, and that was necessary. And obviously that mindset has kind of flipped. But with this Scott Frost offense, it's so much about taking what the defense gives you. So are you okay with Adrian throwing a couple interceptions just because he's trying to make something happen, trying to make a play happen? Or would you rather him just keep those interceptions and fumbles to zero?
Well, I think you want to be as efficient as you can possibly be. So, I don't know that you want to get into a mindset that, well, it's okay, to throw an interception in that situation. And I know that a lot of the mistakes that Adrian has made, I think, are because he's trying to make a play. He's trying to do something. He's trying to get something going. And a lot of times it's not necessarily all on him, but, fumbles. You got to take better care of the ball. Interceptions, you got to make better decisions. You got to get receivers that got to get themselves open, and you got to know where they are. But I don't want to just say, yeah, it's okay. We're going to expect some. You want to go in with the expectation of being perfect, and then some things are going to happen that isn't going to be perfect. But but you strive for perfection, I think.
Babber's going to switch gears, talk a little baseball. Spencer Schwellenbach, All-American team, that's phenomenal. Also named the John Olerud two-way player of the year. What's that mean to you?
Well, I think, you know, well-deserved for Schwellenbach. I was kind of hoping maybe he'd get higher than third team on the All-America team. But, you know, one of the things that I noticed in looking through those All-America teams and some of those awards and so forth, Big Ten doesn't get a lot of respect. You know, again, goes back to what we've talked about before. You know, that certainly is a well-deserved honor, I think. And, it, you know, in some ways it didn't surprise me that he got the recognition. Like I said, I thought maybe he'd get higher than third team, but there were some pretty talented guys, given their numbers, that were in there as well, and they named him as a utility player, and I think that's probably where he needs to be. But and the John Olerud Award, you know, that two-way player of the year, that says a lot about what he accomplished this season.
I remember Olerud's flirtation with 400. I think it was the 89 or 90 season. And he was a staple on first for years with Toronto, but he had such an insane career at Washington State, kind of that folklore of like a Robin Ventura type college baseball stud, and he did it for a long time with MLB. That's a big time award. Babbers, are you adopting a team for Omaha this week when it gets when first pitch happens on Saturday?
You know, I don't think I'll have one adopted by the time of the first pitch. Usually I go into these things, if I don't really have somebody that I'm focused on, I look for the underdogs and try to pull for the underdogs. So there's a lot of ACC, SEC influence here.
There's no underdog to cheer for.
I know.
Someone's either won it or been there 100 times.
That's why I'm kind of going to have to wait and see how things go here and just see who
comes out of the loser's bracket, right?
Maybe who goes down the first day and then who comes back through it. That's what I like to see. But I want to see competitive college World Series, certainly, and I think we're going to see it. I think it's a pretty good field.
Now, Mike, obviously there's like fans that travel from all across the country to come see the College World Series, but do you have a read on which teams maybe the local fans might be rooting for? I don't think it's going to be Texas. I could maybe see NC State after what they did to Arkansas, but did you see any other teams in the field that you think have had support from the local fans in the past and will probably receive that same support again?
Yeah, no, you know, I don't, Elijah. I'm glad you mentioned Texas because that's one team I'm not for. I can eliminate that team right away. I don't know. Did the fans take the Vanderbilt? Possibly.
I think they liked Vandy. I mean, Tennessee with the Eckler tie. We're still working on finding out if Eck's going to be here or not. But, I mean, he's been all in on baseball and social media. I mean, obviously his football Twitter's been great, but his baseball Twitter's been nuts.
There's a reason. I mean, you look for reasons like that, but I think the fans in general are pretty good about most of the teams there. So I think it's pretty supportive of the experience as much as anything. But like I said, no, Texas probably wouldn't be the one team that I would be rooting for.
We're roadieing up Monday and Wednesday next week at Zipline. We're live.
Oh, there you go.
Thursday, isn't it Monday and Thursday?
What did I send out? I don't know. It's a blur. Point is Babbers, you can ride with us, brother, if you want.
Well, I've got stuff going next week. Otherwise, I would.
No worries. We'll
got some bushes being removed and some other stuff. Hopefully,
we'll wave at you.
Do that.
That's good. Mike Babcock's with us from HailVarsity.com and magazine at MDBabs on Twitter. Babbers, thanks for talking some ball with us. Good to get caught up.
Thanks for having me involved, guys.
All right, appreciate you. Good stuff from Mike. What did I send out? I know Monday.
I think you said Monday and Thursday.
Okay.
That's what Will and I are talking about, at least.
Okay, so we'll reel it in. We'll reassess. We'll talk U.S. Open. Shuey's on the way from Wilderness Ridge. Mike Shuard next on Hail Varsity.
And we're back.
Fellas, I think we could listen to the radio
on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
To clarify, yes, we are at Zipline next Monday, next Thursday. Elijah was on it. Roadshow Monday and Thursday. Ahead of the College World Series, you'll hear parts of the College World Series on ESPN Lincoln and some of our affiliates around the state. Looking forward to seeing Doug Duda from ESPN Superstation Tri-Cities. He'll be at the CWS, and then we'll be there to start off the 28th at Zipline Monday for that best of three championship series.
I think I might be going up Saturday, too, to see if I can catch the opening day. That's always a pretty good time.
So. Yeah, that'll be good stuff. I will be watching Junior crush the baseball. Someday he'll learn how to crush the golf ball because he'll spend time with Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf. Shuey, have you melted yet? How are you?
Yeah. I'm good. How are you?
We're good, man. You. I'm gonna ask the obvious. You staying cool, brother?
Yeah, right. As long as you're inside, you don't want to go outside.
That's code. That's code for Schmidt to be at the bar.
That's right.
Instead of out on the course. But tell me what's up, man. How have things been going at Wilderness? Talk to me about fit times. We'll get into some U.S. Open. I need my Divot Dogs update as well.
Oh, Divot Dogs. First match tomorrow at Firethorn, 8 a.m.
Boom.
I got my pairings out. Had practice today. They're looking good. They're ready to go. So we're excited for our first Divot Dog competition of the season.
Do you mind sharing the pairings?
Oh, I got Miles Elgert and Dylan Blanks.
Bang.
They're my leadoff group.
They're good.
Yeah, they're good. I had to put them out there first thing, so got to get some points right on the board. And then I got Big Ben Kottmeyer.
Okay.
And I put a sneaky pairing with him. I put Juliet Shoemaker with him.
Wonderful.
So, yeah, she's been working hard, and she's actually gotten tons better, so she's going to surprise a lot of people. So it's like, whoa. And then I got my reliever, Leo Hung. He's super good. So he's bringing up the third spot. Put him with Big Jack Beatty. So Leo's about 5'1", and Jack's 6'4", so we'll at least intimidate the other team.
That's good. Man, those pairings are awesome.
Yeah, no, Mike, and you're talking about the intimidation factor here. Have you been teaching these kids any trash talk, how to talk some smack for day one, or are you just expecting that they're going to find that as they go?
You let the driver talk the smack and the putter, right?
Well, Schmitty knows Miles, so Miles ain't afraid to talk some smack, that's for sure. So
Miles backs it up, though. It's money.
That is right. He does back it up.
There you go. Let's get into the U.S. Open, Shuey. And, man, you got South Course, Torrey Pines. What are the fellas in for this weekend?
Big, long, nasty golf course. Kind of cool conditions. It'll be perfect conditions. So, man, you gotta drive it straight, just like any U.S. Open, though, man. It's long, tight fairways, long rough. So it's like you gotta be able to keep your ball somewhat in play, and you gotta be able to get it up and down when you miss, because you are gonna miss, and you gotta be composed, and you know, just roll with some of the mistakes that are gonna happen, because they're gonna happen, whether you like it or not. The unique thing about Torrey, which is a little different because of the greens are a different type of grass. They're Poana.
Okay.
And they don't putt. You don't typically putt on Poana. You know, they play there once a year, but you don't, you know, you come to the Midwest and you're on bent grass greens, and Poana is a lot different grass, and especially as the day goes. So Poana, Poa trivialis. I mean, they get pretty bumpy and lumpy. So it's like guys that are really, really good strokers of the golf ball, that they actually roll the ball really well over the years, have done well there. Like a Patrick Reed, he's one of the best putters out there. He's had a lot of success there. So, I mean, some guys that don't roll the ball very well, it's not very conducive to them. So you see some guys struggle trying to make putts, you know, like a Rory. You know, you got a couple other guys, Bryson. So it's like, They're just not going to be able to typically roll the ball as well as they do in a more Midwestern or a bent grass type of thing. So that's one of the unique things about it, just what surface you're putting on, which is quite a bit different than what you typically are used to putting on.
Mike Schuart's with us, Wilderness Ridge Golf, Hail Varsity Radio. We're talking U.S. Open. Are you surprised that they're not pairing Brooks and Bryson together?
You have a fist fight right there about three holes in.
You know, it worked out for Bob and Happy. I mean, it brought viewership. I'm joking, but those guys both may not like each other, but I think they could coexist. I mean, the center of attention would be on that group for sure.
Oh, the attention would definitely be there, but that wouldn't bother them guys, because once the tournament starts, they're in their own world doing their own thing, you know, and then they can they set that aside and they go play golf because they're trying to win a major championship. So they're too good at that. They know how to narrow their focus and doing what it is they need to do at the time they need to do it.
So we got about 2 minutes left here before we get out. I want to ask you about some other golf news I saw today, and that's that the PGA Tour is most likely going to ban the green reading books after the Tour's Player Advisory Council voted to outlaw the books at their meeting about a week ago. So what does that mean for the game of golf, that beginning next season there's probably not going to be any green reading books allowed to be used by the players?
That's bad news for the caddy, because that means the caddy's got to do more work. That's worse on the caddy than it is the player, because the caddy's like, man, typically they have to go out and chart the greens anyway for their players. Mm. The greens reading book just allowed them to make their job easier, so now they got to go back, do a little more work. But I know it's I like it, you know, because it's like they banned the belly putting and things like that. There's some things in golf you have to be able to teach yourself to be able to do and master your ability to do it, you know, and they keep adding things to it that make it easier. And it's like, that's one of the skills that you have to learn and you have to be really good at to be successful. It's like, you got to learn how to read a green. It's like, why can't I buy a book that tells me pretty much what's going to happen? You know, it's like, that's a skill that you should learn to have to be able to do.
No cliff notes allowed.
Exactly.
Shuey, real quick, about 30 seconds, bud. Fit Friday, what's is that happening this Friday, or what's the next fitting?
Yep, we have one planned for this Friday. So if anybody wants to come out, try some of the equipment that's out there, get fit with some of the equipment, then just give us a holler, and we'll set up a time, and they can come out and try some of the equipment that's out there and see if we can fit them up with something that makes them better.
I think Scotty's got the beer real cold for you, too, when you get off the 18th.
He definitely does that really well, so you can always count on Scotty having that ready.
Mike Schuart, Wilderness Ridge Golf. Shuey, awesome to chat with you. We'll recap the U.S. Open here next week, and stay cool, brother, and thanks for what you're doing for golf.
All right, I appreciate it. You guys stay safe.
There he is, Mike Schuart, Wilderness Ridge Golf, and that showdown tomorrow. With them Divot Dogs, going to be good. We'll wind down hour one. Eric Warfield's on the way with Hail Varsity.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One final time this hour, Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Find the podcast, Hail Varsity Radio, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. Good, bad, or ugly, tell us what you think. Give us a review. And to subscribe, it don't cost nothing. Reminder to buckle up, 70% of people in fatal crashes. In Nebraska, not wearing a seatbelt, if properly used, seatbelts can reduce risk of fatal injury by up to 60%. Your best defense in any crash, buckling up, brought to you by the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office. The Derek, our weather guy, sounds like Mr. Garrison.
Mm-hmm.
What did he say the temp was? Here in Lincoln, like
101, I think.
Something like that, yeah. Well, the silence has been broken. The interview with Barstool, Nick McKellar. You may know him as Sons in Four guy. The guy who fought two dastardly Nuggets fans in Mile High, the city of Denver, Pepsi Center or whatever it's called now.
Ball Arena.
Thank you. and pummeled him. We all saw it on Twitter. It went viral, million views. This is the setup and what happened.
So first and foremost, I am not a hockey player, believe it or not. Anyways, yeah, so, you know, I'm a diehard Suns fan living in Denver for the last 10 years, and I've been dreaming about a playoff matchup like this for quite some time. And so the fact that it came into fruition, I'm like ecstatic, right? Like I'm trying to have the most fun I can at this game. I'm in section 106. I'm right behind the home, the away team. And I'm right next to the tunnel as well. So like when I got there, I was just trying to make friends with everybody. Like I'm talking to the Nuggets fans. I'm talking to the Suns fan. Like I'm just trying to make a positive atmosphere here. And so, you know, cut to the fourth quarter, there's 3 minutes remaining in the clock. Suns are up by like 15. And I see these two guys walking up the stairs. And I'm in the midst of like just chirping at the crowd a little bit. You know, I'm saying lighthearted things like, hey, you know, have a safe drive home. See you next year. Bye. I wasn't trying to insult anybody. Right. So these guys are walking past me and obviously they didn't think it was funny. Meanwhile, the whole crowd that I made friends with initially, they're laughing. They're having a good time. I wasn't being annoying. So these guys are like, you know what? I'm not taking this too. I'm taking offense to this. I'm going to get in your face and talk shit. So homeboy with four watches came up to me, just started flaunting his clearly fake accessories. And so I had to tell him about it. Like he was talking shit, I was talking shit, and I was like, you know, get the fuck out of my face. I don't want to, you know, get into a physical altercation with you. Just like go home. You're a joke.
Four watches. Denver fan talking. Do we have time? All right, let's roll.
Then he decides to pull out a wad of cash. Like that's going to change my opinion on you. So it went from pulling out wads of cash to me turning my head because I'm just like, I'm just confused. Like, how do people conduct themselves in this way in public? I was just shocked, you know? So, you know, you cut to me turning away, telling them to go away. My jersey's being tugged from the back and a beer is thrown on top of my head. And then, you know, the viral video cuts in and it's me, you know, instincts of self-defense kick in. I'm pushing them away, grabbing their jerseys, you know, get out of my face, go home. And then Eager Edgar, you know, puts his money in his pocket and goes for a sloppy sucker punch. And, you know, I duck it. And once I got a hold of his jersey and his chain, like I didn't want to just control his chain because I knew I could break that off, but I just wanted to control the jersey and the chain. And once I had that grip, I kind of just like had a little smirk on my face.
Technique. Controlled jersey and chain.
Once you control both breaking. Those, you control the man.
You do. And 75 punches later, Eager Edgar's getting a nose job. Eric Warfield, Husker standout, Kansas City Chief, next.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back into it, hour two at Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Let's talk some ball. And, of course, a great fundraiser and event coming up here, too. Eric Warfield, Husker standout, Chief Patriot with us. Warfield, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, the heat wave is finally starting to come in, so I won't be swinging the club as much.
So I was going to say, how does Eric Warfield navigate incredible temperatures? I mean, you're down in Big D, but you're coming back up here, and we've got that triple-digit welcome for you.
Yeah, I saw that, and I was a little caught off guard. Like, man, this can't be Nebraska, not 104 this time of the year.
Man, that makes that off-season trade-in a real commitment, right? Well, you can find Eric on Twitter at EA Warfield 44. Now, Eric, before we dive into some ball, you've got the Lighthouse event coming up here next week. Give folks a heads up on the Lighthouse, your involvement, and what's going on.
Man, I've been involved with the Lighthouse for the longest, I think ever since I retired. So I had been doing a basketball event where we play the Lincoln Police Department as a fundraiser. And then I continued doing 100 kids for Christmas shopping for the Lighthouse, and all majority of those kids came from the Lighthouse. So this has been kind of a passion thing to where, you know, I've been doing this ever since high school because my mom was had taken in some foster kids. So I've kind of got a soft spot for trying to help those that are in unfortunate situations. And the Lighthouse is an after-school program right there in Lincoln, Nebraska, that has been thriving for years to help and inspire, motivate those young kids. A lot of inner city kids, but it's not all inner city kids. You get some kids from around the suburbs that come and take part in it also. So it's a very special program that's kind of dear to me, that we just, you know, help in many ways to help raise money and awareness to what they're doing. So
important, after school, you know, direction. And Eric, kind of take us a little further, if you can, just like growing up and just kind of your family background with, you know, you talk about your mother and foster kids and wanting to help out and be a positive influence. You've obviously paid that forward with your career and then even post-career.
Yeah. And so like in high school, well, not before high school, my mom had gotten legal custody of one of my very best friends. Mm-hmm. And after he came to stay, two others came about maybe a year after that. So she was raising her three kids as a single parent, along with three others. And I don't know how she did it, Chris, but she managed to get us all educated and out of the house. And so by the time we all graduated, you know, she was kind of used to taking care of all that madness.
Mm-hmm.
And so she started bringing in foster kids. And throughout the years, you know, these kids would, you know, contact me, write letters, call, and to see the things that I was doing at the time at Nebraska winning national championships. So they were definitely inspired to want more out of life. So she just got way deep into it to where it just became everything to her. Mm. And for me to see the reactions that these kids gave my mom, the smile that they put on her face, to see how her caring, how her help, you know, guidance was pushing them to become individuals that we never imagined. Because a lot of these kids come from the streets. A lot of these kids come from group homes. So it was one to where you see a lot of the growth within the kids, but then you see that there's some that are, you know, no matter how much help you give them, they just continue to go off that deep end. Mm-hmm. And even though, you know, you see those that aren't wanting the help, that doesn't mean you give up on them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one thing that she's always done. And throughout the year, she continues to keep in touch with all those kids. So when I got to Kansas City, you know, that's one thing that the Chiefs and a lot of other people want you to do is to try to start a foundation to help give back to the community. And so Tony Gonzalez was one that kind of got me started with the 100 kids, because that was a thing that he did. And so I just continued doing it. And especially when I got to Lincoln, it became such a hit with the Lighthouse, and the kids loved it because I would bring out student athletes from the University of Nebraska. So we have all the kids from the university in every sport come out, and they would escort these kids through Walmart as they did their shopping. Mm-hmm. So these kids would get to see these student athletes that came from basically the same places that they came from. And now they're on full scholarships trying to, you know, become better individuals themselves. So it's a story within a story to where the kids shop with, you know, those kids that are going shopping, and they get to hear stories from those kids, and those kids also get to hear stories from those student athletes.
Well, and it's kind of planting that movement for success. And Eric, that's awesome, man, what you've been doing with the Lighthouse for so many years. Thanks for what you're doing, and those kids, I'm sure, are super thankful. And vice versa. I mean, you're thankful to be able to be around kids like that, influence and help them thrive and strive. Where can folks find out more if they want to donate to the Lighthouse, donate to your foundation? Where's a website, or is it Twitter? Is it Facebook? I mean, where can folks get more info on the event? Obviously, the charity basketball game, but also if they want to do something around the holidays.
So the Lighthouse is located there in Lincoln, Nebraska. I think it's 27th and N Street.
Yep.
I don't know the exact address of it, but I want to say 2701 N Street. And the website is the Lighthouse, Lincoln, Nebraska. They're on every outlet of social media as far as Twitter, Facebook, and
Instagram.
At the Lighthouse, Lincoln, Nebraska. My foundation is, I don't have an actual foundation itself because I work so much with the Lighthouse.
Sure. Gotcha.
And so everything is, I have anybody give me any cash, they'll write any checks to me. Everything goes directly towards the Lighthouse.
No, that's
a headache I do not want to deal with.
That's no worries, man.
So yeah, everything's towards the Lighthouse, and you can Google it. You can get on any social media outlet to find them. And usually during the holidays, when we do our event, I post. Now, because of COVID in the last couple of years, I haven't done anything with the Lighthouse. So we're getting back on track this year with the golf event to help raise money and get things rolling again.
Well, that's awesome. Eric Warfield's with us, standout Husker, Chief, Patriot, and his work with the Lighthouse, Hail Varsity Radio. When we talk about inspiration, Eric, you had a really cool moment yesterday that was released on social media. And that was Coach Osborne, your head coach, and T.O. Got in front of the team. This was released by Coach Frost in the Nebraska social media. Words of motivation. Coach Osborne, just, he always has had a knack for A, being right with what's going to happen, like predicting the future, right? But also being able to motivate. And it was really cool with just, you know, are you putting the work in? Are you able to take that talent you have and excel? I don't know if you saw the video or not, but what was it like for you? And do you remember moments with Coach Osborne when he was able to motivate you and or your team?
So, you know, Coach Osborne came to my high school, obviously, during recruiting time. And, Chris, I didn't know he was coming that weekend. And he stepped in through the door of basketball season. Now, he came during football season and watched me play a game. And I got wind that he had showed that he was coming for that weekend. But when he came to the basketball game, I didn't know he was coming. And so when he walked in, some of the elders knew who he was, and the whole place just lit up. And I didn't know. And I thought it was because I was playing pretty good basketball.
Thought it was you?
I was getting the crowd riled up.
That's
it was
awesome.
Coach Osborne that had stepped in the door. And so obviously he had made an impact on the game of football already by this point, and everybody knew who he was. And the thing that he brought to the game as far as, like, motivation, a guidance for a lot of us that didn't have two parents at home. Like I said, I was raised by a single parent, my mom. So just having someone like him to take the time out to get to know me as an individual outside of football meant a lot to me because I didn't have a dad growing up. I had uncles and, you know, male figures around that could give me little advice here and there, but nothing like Coach Osborne. And so I wish that the kids nowadays knew exactly who he was. I wish he was, you know, able to be there weekly to talk to these kids so that they can see, you know, what he brings to the game of football and to their lives, you know, as a coach and as a father figure for some of those that don't have it. So it was more so to where with Coach Osborne, it was like being around your grandparents. So your grandparents are the one person, the group of people that you do not want to disappoint at any cost. You know, you can go out and get reprimanded by your mom and you think it's okay, you know, she's just being silly, or your dad, and say the same thing. But you never want to disappoint your grandparents. And they always try to give you that best advice. And that's kind of what Coach Osborne, what he kind of symbolized, because we knew what greatness he brought to the team as a coach, because you saw it within every coach that was on the team. You saw it within the practice. You saw it within how he ran the organization. The guy never had he never yelled at anyone. He always had a specific point that he wanted to get across, and he got that across to you without yelling at you. He coached in a special way to where he inspired you. He brought the best out of you, even though you may not have been the best athlete on the team or in high school. He brought the best out of you when you got to that program. And I just, you know, for how people compare the best college football teams to ever play, and they say that 2001 Miami team had so many greats that played in the NFL and had tremendous careers, of which they did. I still don't see the comparison of them to us, to what we had. And we didn't have those high caliber, big name guys like they did. But that's what Coach Osborne brought out of these little young high school knuckleheads that he gathered from all across the USA. And we, you know, produced championships after championships because that's what we had that was running the running the ship of our team. And so, he was able to do that. And I, like I said, I just wish the kids nowadays, because they weren't even born with the times we were winning. You know, they weren't born in the time when Coach Osborne was doing this coaching. So I just wish that they had an opportunity to really hear and to really see with this man in action, you know. And it's great to that he can go into the meeting and speak to them and give them a piece of his mind and to show what he's done and who he is. But I just wish that they could see the full realm of who he is.
Eric Warfield's with us, Hale Varsity Radio. We're kind of recapping Coach Osborne, the video that came out on Twitter, words of motivation, several points touched on with that 4-minute video. And when it came to paying the price, I know you and your teammates did extra. Eric, you guys won. You had NFL talent. But when it comes down to it, why do you think you guys won so much? Is it because you had that talent, or you had the attitude slash mindset, or because you had the coaching? I think there's all of the above, probably.
I agree 100%. It's all of the above. And it's just is what the coaches and Coach Osborne brought to the players. And so yeah, it was a toughness and an attitude. You know, our practices, and for us being as good as we were back then, majority of the season, the best competition that we got was at practice, having to go up against each other. And I'm not trying to knock any other football team that we beat during those years or that we played during those years to say that they weren't that good. But the best talent or the hardest work that we got was in practice against each other for some of those games. And yeah, we had some great matchups with some teams. To take nothing away from them. But the attitude that we had at practice, that we wanted to be the best, and that we had to prove that we were the best year after year, because we thought, heck, every year we knew we had the best coach, we knew we had the best staff, and we thought we had the best team. So after that, it was just going out and proving it. But that's what the University of Nebraska provided us. They provided everything that we needed to be the best, nutrition-wise, in the weight room-wise, classroom-wise. It was just up to us as kids to go out and perform then.
It's Eric Warfield with us, Hale Varsity Radio. More with Warfield coming up here next segment. We'll dive into some NFL with him. Also, get his take on Tariq Johnson, a quarterback that has transferred in. Reminder about West Blue Realty. Is the time now to sell your home? Are you looking for a new home in a tough market? West Blue Realty, there for you. They specialize in residential home sales in Lincoln and the surrounding communities. Give Tom Luby a shout at 402-540-3768 or Kelly Hofschneider. Kelly can help at 402-202-2312, 1120 K Street, Suite 200, westbluerealty.com.
And we're back.
Fellas, I think we could listen to the radio
on Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome.
Eric Warfield's with us, Hale Varsity Radio, touching on his time at Nebraska. Eric, want to look at some NFL thoughts in just a second, but you're a college football fan. You watch, you make it back to Lincoln for a few games. What's your take here on expansion here of the playoff, going from 4 to 12. Do you like it? Do you think 8 is the better number? Do you like 4? And if and when they expand, and it sounds like 2023, does that mean, listen, Nebraska's got a shot? I know Nebraska's got a ways to go, but they could make a jump here if things get on track to be knocking on that playoff door coming out of the Big Ten. What's your takeaway here with what tweaks are going on here postseason?
So the thing that I've learned about sports, and not just to, you know, use this the name of this movie to pertain to NFL, but any given Sunday, which means any team has a chance to win on any given day.
Sure.
And I think that by expanding it, it gives every other team an opportunity. You know, just because you're voted at this high ranking number at the end of the year with the top four teams and having that 14 playoff. Go in with – it's just like the NCAA. You know, you have some what do they call those Cinderella teams to come out of nowhere. And I love that idea of expansion. So much happens with football. You know, we complain because we think that it's not the same as what we knew growing up. You know, they're calling, you know, for targeting certain hits, certain plays. We think it's an offensive game nowadays because – it's so catered to the offense, but whatever they change with it, we still love the game of football, no matter how they tweak it, what they want to call it. You know, if they throw apples and oranges out there for us to toss it around, we're still going to love that game. Mm-hmm. So adding and expanding teams and playoffs, I'm for it. You know, heck, if I can make football year-round, I'd love to watch it year-round, but I understand what that does to the body and the mind of individuals. So I'm all for it, Chris. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you want to add the extra playoff teams, I like I said, let's do it and give these other teams a chance to prove that they're willing to. I think that it would help a team like the UCF that, you know, that, mm-hmm. that were left out and that, you know, they went undefeated that year and thought that, you know, they could have beaten, I think it was Alabama that had a loss that year, mm-hmm. and ended up winning it all. So it gives those teams a chance. Now, granted, but we don't know based on university size, player wise, and whatever else that if those teams are able to keep up. But you give them a chance and let them prove themselves. With the expansion, it does.
Let's talk Tyreek Johnson, five-star transfer from Ohio State, going to be in that Nebraska secondary. Eric, you know who wanted him. You know that Ohio State was pretty loaded in the secondary, and you know that Coach Fisher's got a really nice defensive backfield where he cross-trains his guys, safety and corner. You know, what's this do for the Big Red in the secondary? Already a good secondary, we felt like, going into 2021.
I like it. He has great size, you know, highly looked out and you know, played with an Ohio team that was really, really good. And, yeah, they have produced some really, really good secondary guys. So, you know, hopefully it can beef up our secondary and beef up our defense where, you know, we're more competitive on that defensive side. So I like him. It's just a matter of what he can do once he gets there. Mm-hmm. You know, it all looks good on paper so far, but when it comes down to it, is what can you do on Saturdays for us as a team? So, but right as of now, I love the pick. You know the transfer, and you know, hopefully we got. When it comes to secondary, I love the guys when they're big, tall, 6 foot mm-hmm. plus, great. But overall, my thing is the front seven. If the front seven can't produce any pressure, you know, you as a DB aren't going to be what you're sought out to be.
That's very fair. That's you know, priority number one or 1A is to get after the quarterback, and a lot of guys back for that Nebraska Blackshirt defense. Eric Warfield's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Eric, last thought here. We were talking about this a while back, but I want to get into your NFL career. Was it Randy Moss and then like everybody else when it came to just the greats you had to defend? Who are some of the guys you defended that you enjoyed defending, or maybe didn't enjoy defending, but man, that was a cool experience to at least get to do it? We talked about, and this was a few weeks back, where you had an NFL pundit say maybe the best deep threat ever, the Cheetah, Tyreek Hill. Well, the world said no, it's Randy Moss, and
yeah.
I know you went against Randy quite a few times when he was in Oakland.
Yeah. So I actually, more than a few times, our training camp was in River Falls, Wisconsin. And
okay.
So we were 20, 30 minutes from where the Vikings had practiced at. And so we practiced against them every year at training camp. So I got to see Randy a lot. The good thing about my career was that I played against a lot of those big name guys, a lot of Hall of Famers, and I played well. Now, my thing, Chris, was that I get up against some guys that weren't the biggest names, weren't the standout all Pro Bowl players.
Mm-hmm.
And at times, you know, I play really well during the game, and all of a sudden they catch me sleeping because I never think it's going to come my way. And I get caught with, you know, either some deep pass or touchdown. So, you know, I'm not ashamed to admit that.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, when I went up against a lot of the big name guys, you know, the Terrell Owens, Torrey Holt, Isaac Bruce, and Chad Ochocinco. You know, now granted, the battles were a little intense and more when we went up against Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne. But I never really guarded Reggie Wayne. I was mostly on Marvin Harrison. And so, yeah, I had some troubles with the little small guys. But other than that, I enjoyed my battles with Ochocinco and Terrell Owens and Randy Moss, Torrey Holt. Those guys they're all Pro Bowlers, and my challenges up against them, I balled out. You know, I don't think I gave up any touchdowns to either one of those guys.
What was who was the biggest talker, and who did you have probably the best relationship with, like mutual respect?
Mutual respect came with Rod Smith, you know, but he's from my hometown, same high school.
So gotcha.
It was a joy to go out there and play up against him because it was competitive every play, but it was a friendly competition to where it's like, you know, Rod is good. I think Rod has Hall of Fame numbers, probably should be there one day. You know, I know he's in the Broncos Hall of Fame and Ring of Honor, but yeah, he definitely has Hall of Fame numbers to get him. He's one of those unsung heroes.
Eric Warfield's with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Eric, congrats on what you're doing with the Lighthouse. Thanks for talking some TOs, some Huskers, and of course some NFL, and we'll get caught up again soon, and always love your insight, man.
Appreciate it, man.
Good to hear from Eric Warfield. Get caught up with him. We'll no doubt tap back into his expertise with Nebraska football and the NFL, as we get closer to kickoff. Big Red Blitz continues on. Norfolk, the site where you had Matt Davison talking, also Greg Austin spending some time, the run game coordinator and offensive line coach. And my dad and his family, all from Norfolk. So you got to make sure you pronounce it correctly, Norfolk. And that's one thing that was covered off the get-go. But the thing about Nebraska's facility here, we talk arms race and facilities. And facilities at Clemson right now, like 130,000, 140,000 square feet. It's massive. It's giant. Everything's under one umbrella. We've had Coach Kaczynski tell us, because he's visited it before, that it's so convenient, right? Where you can have everything housed, bang, right there. And it's efficiency as much as show and tell. Well, Davison was touching on just what Nebraska's new facility, and he helped spearhead this. He did a phenomenal job with it. 300,000 square feet. So Nebraska's will be the biggest, the baddest, the best on the block once it gets done until the next one. Right now, like the envy of the Big Ten, your home football stadium's garbage, but man, your practice facility on Lake Michigan's pretty sweet if you're Northwestern. So that's where things are at right now. The plans for Nebraska, 300,000 square feet. That's the facility. That's coaches' offices. That's that four-station practice set up outdoors. And it's all linked, of course, training center. And, yeah, the training table for all student-athletes. So really cool. You've got the indoor facility. The Hawk Center's been up for... When was that done? Like 05, 04, 05?
I was a young child, so I think 04.
He was a young child.
I think the USC like college game day game in 2005 was like
That was 06 in Lincoln.
So then they must have finished in 05 then, yeah.
05, they hung with SC in 05 out there.
Mm-hmm.
06, three fullback runs and 80 yards later to touchdown. So... We're adopting Tennessee. We couldn't quite talk Babers into it. He's still weighing his options for the College World Series next Monday, next Thursday. We're at Zipline in downtown Omaha, right across from TD Ameritrade. We were there last time. There was a College World Series. Love our friends at Zipline. Thanks to them for having us. This was pure gold, as they say, between Tennessee baseball and Peyton Manning.
Hey, sorry. Let me grab this Zoom call real quick. Peyton, what's up, man?
Coach, what's going on? Congratulations. Awesome win in the Supers. Really proud of you guys. This is exciting stuff.
Thanks a ton. We're anxious to get up to...
Omaha!
Yeah, that's right.
You guys are playing hard. It's been fun to watch.
Well, thank you. Yeah, the guys are doing what they need to do, and the fans in the stands have been rowdy. We're hoping they pack up their bags and meet us up in...
Omaha!
Yeah, that's the place.
That's what you're talking about. You're talking about Omaha. Okay, good. I'm just making sure. And so, Coach, when are you guys heading out?
We'll load up the bus and jump on our flight tomorrow afternoon and, go on up to...
Omaha!
Yes, that's accurate. That is accurate.
Okay. Well, look, Coach, like I said, great to talk to you. Best of luck. We're pulling hard for you guys. Tell the team we said good luck. Listen, if you need me, I'll be ready. I'll have my arm loose for you.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back into it, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Brandon Seifert with us. Dr. Brandon, there's no foreign substances on your hands right now, are there?
You know, I was thinking about putting a little sunscreen on here up in the office and maybe help the radio show talk today. But,
well,
you know, I'm kind of worried that maybe I'd get a little elbow injury with that or something.
Well, I've got the rosin, so we can combine it. But this is, you've had outrage and outcry about spin rates and pitching dominating and how doctored the baseballs have been. Well, you have a UCL injury, and you have a stud pitcher for Tampa, Tyler Glasnow. He's blaming MLB and the crackdown on foreign substance for his UCL injury. He sounded off earlier this week with a partially torn ulnar collateral ligament and flexor tendon strain. Of course, you have MLB's initiative to do away with sunscreen and spider tack. Obviously, it's never been legal, but the long and short of this here is you've had Glasnow really gripping his pitches a certain way, right, when he's been able to have sunscreen. Now he's got to really, really intensify his grip to get his curveball going. And after the last couple of starts, he heard a pop. Well, what do you make of this?
Yeah, pretty interesting. Obviously, if you're changing your mechanics to throw the ball a little bit differently to work on that spin rate, then that obviously puts a little bit more stress on the elbow and that can cause injuries. But basically admitting that you're not using the substance now, the sunscreen, and all of a sudden you're doing that tells you something right there. Mm-hmm. But obviously, you know, changing the mechanics, you know, something like that definitely can happen. Although shifting the blame to the MLB is an interesting way to go with that. But essentially, if you look at this, just kind of talking anatomically about this, we've talked before on the Tommy John or UCL injuries, just to review that anatomically. So if you think about your elbow, you kind of feel along the inside part of your elbow, there's a little kind of bony prominence there, your funny bone. That's called the medial epicondyle. And that area is where that ligament can attach. And also in that area is where a big muscular group called your flexor pronator attaches. And as you talk about his injury, so he's got a little small kind of partial strain to the ligament that runs across that area, but also the big muscular group that attaches to that, the flexor muscle, flexor pronator. That's where his injury is located. The flexor pronator side of things, definitely a more common injury that we see in baseball players. It's a very, very high rate of that occurring when we do have players coming in with elbow pain, and that's the most common thing we see with elbow pain to the inside or medial side of the elbow. The Tommy John or UCL injuries are you know, less common, although you hear about them all the time. They're still not that common of an injury. Obviously, since we're MRI-ing everything these days, especially at the major league level, they're seeing more of this kind of fluid and inflammation in these MRIs and calling partial, you know, UCLA or UCL sprains or Tommy John type injuries. And so in the past, there were probably a lot of these where patients have fluid or swelling around that ligament, but wasn't ever, you know, diagnosed in the past because they weren't MRI-ing everybody. So that seems to get kind of tossed in every time somebody has a pain to the inside of their elbow, is that's a, you know, partial sprain. So what does that mean? It's kind of a huge spectrum of those things. But that's kind of anatomical we're talking about, and obviously an interesting way of shifting the blame of that injury onto that Major League Baseball.
Dr. Brandon Seifert's with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking about Tampa Bay righty Tyler Glasnow and blaming MLB for the foreign substance crackdown. He's had to change his grip, and after doing so, a couple of starts, he's been sore and then heard a pop, and he has that that UCL sprain. So I'm interested here just what extra pressure or grip or changing how you hold a ball, what it can do to the rest of your arm, Dr. Brandon. Just from Tyler's argument standpoint, is he wrong as far as having to switch up and having this recourse, this happen to his arm, this injury coming up?
Yeah, you know, good question, Chris. Just on the grip side of things, is, you know, how does that grip change, you know, lead to different forces or stresses elsewhere? Mm-hmm. You know, pretty commonly that's the case. And so depending on, you know, how you grip the baseball, depending on kind of the firmness, if you will, of how hard you grab the baseball, the position of where your fingers are, that adds different tension or different pressures over different aspects of the shoulder, over different aspects of the elbow, shoulder as well. And so as you do that, as you change the pressure in those areas, change where those fingers are located, sometimes you'll get maybe a little bit more kind of rotation one way or the other on your wrist, and then all of that force, of course, transfers through the elbow and even up into the shoulder. And those kinds of things, again, it's that change in mechanics that obviously can lead to these injuries. And so he's not wrong in the sense of if he's having to change his grip, then, yep, you can definitely end up in a situation where you have, you know, some type of extra stress in the area, the flexor pronator strain, the UCL sprain they're talking about. That's quite common for that to occur. We do see it a lot when pitchers are trying to change, you know, either a different pitch they're trying to throw, or if they're trying to come at it, you know, from a different angle. All those kind of things definitely can contribute to these kind of injuries and can lead to a significant injury, quite frankly, especially when you're throwing as hard as they do.
Well, it's not a popular decision. Glasnow's like, look, make these changes at the end of the season. We're halfway through the season now. You don't want pitchers to have a competitive advantage over hitters, you know, because Lord knows the steroid era was was lucrative when hitters had a decided advantage over pitchers, right? Unless pitchers got on the juice themselves. But the Rays vet says, look, I used to hold a ball like an egg, but since doing away with any grip enhancers, I've had to squeeze it much harder. And then there's your stress. He's 6'7", he throws 100, and that change is contributed. So I guess my question here, I got about a minute and a half left, Dr. Brandon. How long has he been using that rosin sunscreen combo with his pitching? And is he, is it, I don't want to say it's made him the pitcher he is and hurt. Is that fair?
Yeah, fair assessment. And so, you know, it brings up an interesting point of Major League Baseball and owners. Pitchers have grown up, you know, using this quote-unquote substance to, you know, help their spin rates and their throwing, and they've gotten used to their mechanics doing this. How much do you enforce the rule? Mm-hmm. And now pitchers are having to change their mechanics to get back to that competitive edge, and then you start having a rash of these injuries come up, which, you know, that is an interesting point to bring up. Obviously, you're cheating, essentially, by using that, versus protecting your investments of players. Do you just let this slide and let it continue? I mean, it's an interesting point for debate. That'll be a big question, because obviously you're going to start to see potentially a significant increase in injuries because they're not using the substance. And so now they're having to do things differently. And so, yeah, you really could see, to his point, you really could see an explosion in injuries from pitchers trying to recreate some of that spin magic without having the extra extra sticky stuff on the fingers.
Well, they're hoping for an increase in offense and in average for sure. Dr. Brandon Seifert's with us. Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. Dr. Brandon, great to get caught up again. We'll do this again soon. Thanks for your insight today.
You bet, Chris. Thank you. You guys take care.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Good stuff today. Big thanks to Mike Babcock, Mike Shuhart, Eric Warfield, and Dr. Brandon Seifert, Lincoln Orthopedic. We're talking the scourge all over baseball. Spider tank. Players having to adjust. And we spent a lot of time on what's been going on, and that is the fact pitchers are having to adjust to not using foreign substances. Tyler Glass now not happy. This is his rant. It has been edited for your listening pleasure.
In the past, my substance of choice is sunscreen and rosin. Like, just nothing egregious, something to where I can get a grip on the ball so it doesn't feel dusty. But two starts ago against the Nationals, I went cold turkey, nothing. And before that start, I remember when all this stuff came out, I was talking to people and talking to doctors, and they were like, the thing that maybe MLB doesn't realize or that players don't realize is, like, what is the injury, like, what is the prevention of, like, maybe it'll add to injuries. And in my mind, I was like, that sounds dumb. That sounds like an excuse a player would use to make sure he can use sticky stuff. But I threw to the Nationals with nothing. I don't use sticky stuff. I don't use spider tack. I don't need more spin. I have huge hands. I spin the ball fine. I want grip. I did well against the Nationals. Probably one of the best starts I had all year. I woke up the next day and was like, I am sore in places that I didn't even know I had muscles in. Like, I felt completely different. I switched my fastball grip and my curveball grip. I've thrown it the same way for however many years I played baseball. I had to put my fastball deeper into my hand and grip it way harder. And I had to, instead of holding my curveball at the tip of my fingers, I had to dig it deeper into my hand. So I'm like choking the out of all my pitches. My cue I used to use with Snyder was hold the ball like an egg, like nice and loose, be loose. That's out of the window. So I now have to develop a new cue. I have to develop something where I can't hold the ball light anymore. I have to dig it deep into my hand. So I'm taking it, and you have to think, I'm not a doctor. I know you guys probably know that. But I'm taking a fastball. I'm squeezing the ball twice as hard. So all of this is, I'm recruiting all these muscles, and I'm taking my arm as hard as I can throw the ball. So I'm going from, like, a flexed muscle to letting a ball go. And like I said, I was like, maybe it's not going to – I don't think it'll lead to any injuries. But waking up after that start, I was like, okay, this sucks. Something is weird here. And then that same feeling is persisting all week long. And then I go into my start yesterday, and that same feeling just, it pops, or whatever the hell happened to my elbow. Like, I feel it. Something happens.
Tyler Glass now. And I have no doubt that if you've been using a foreign substance of choice all along, and then all of a sudden you got to go cold turkey, guys are going to get hurt. And I don't disagree with him that, listen, it could be policed. There's cheating that happens all the time in baseball. And that's part of baseball. It's always been part of baseball. It's like the scene in American Pie where the older brother passes down to the younger brother the Book of Secrets, right? Well, that has happened, i.e. when it comes to foreign substances in baseball, for years. So the moral of this story is you need to adapt, and Major League Baseball's making it happen before Monday.
There's two ways this can go. Either pitchers can take some velocity off of their pitches and try to prevent injuries, or maybe the MLB does some universal, okay, we'll add a little bit of grip to the balls as opposed to leather we've been doing for years, but I don't see that happening.
No, and I don't disagree with Glasnow saying the to get the grip you want, not every baseball is the same. Back at you tomorrow, Brandon Vogel, Coach Barnett, and Danny Burke. Thanks.